We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back, everybody. Buffalo Bills Football Monday. The Bills off a second straight season-opening win over the Jets, 27-17. One of Eric Wood's tweets yesterday before the game said, and I don't know the backstory here, Eric, but Sal and Chris Brown will not ask me, so I will give you my prediction anyway, 24-14. Pretty close.
That was pretty close. I had the point differential right. I was off by 3 points each way.
Yeah, pretty. Is there something you want to get off your chest about how you were not asked this prediction?
Well, I'm not on the pregame roundtable anymore now that I'm not calling the game.
That's right.
Steve Tasker gets to give his predictions now. I used to have fun betting a coffee for the next week, who had to pick it up on the way into the stadium with those guys.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, sorry not to hear you on game days, but I see you're doing ACC Network again. You got to do a Louisville game, and you're doing a lot with the Bills, including this time with us.
Yeah, it feels like the old days getting to do these again. And, I'm going to try and stay involved with the organization any way I can. With the travel restrictions into New York right now, it made it virtually impossible for me to be able to come up and call the games, and I'm still contracted through ESPN, so I work Saturdays. I couldn't get up there in time to pass the COVID test, but if we get back to normalcy in any way, shape, or form by the end of the season, hopefully I'll be calling games again, but we'll take it as it goes.
All right. Well, we're happy to have you back on our show, and we hope that you're back in that broadcast booth, really soon, sooner definitely than later. So 24-14 was your pick. 27-17 ends up being the score. Did you envision the kind of passing game that the Bills ended up having and Josh Allen ended up having when you were thinking about what the game would go like, Eric?
You know, if I was racked before the game, I'd have said, you know, Josh is going to set a career high for yards and completions, and I would have predicted it perfectly. But in all seriousness, I think Brian Daboll has done a very good job throughout his tenure of trying to attack the opponent's weaknesses. And going into that game, the strength of that defense was going to be their front four, with C.J. Mosley out, opting out on the season, their star linebacker, with Avery Williamson out, you know, you could attack the linebackers in the secondary. So they started the game at 10 personnel and hurry up, tire out that defensive line like they wanted to. The pass rush, Josh Allen at times, especially later in drives, felt like he had all day to throw back there, and a lot of that is wearing out that defensive line and attacking that secondary and showing off your brand-new weapon in Stephon Diggs and two receivers that Josh Allen, it shows, still has a great rapport with Cole Beasley and John Brown.
Eric Wood with us. Eric, can you talk about how Allen's ability as a runner makes other things on the offense easier or even possible? Like, here, we're in the end of the season now, and maybe the subject that fans want to talk about the most is Allen's running. We know he's great at it. We know he fumbles. That happened twice yesterday. And, of course, also a lot of people think, well, it's just logical to think he'd be at more risk of injury. But one reason for doing it, I think, would be what it can open up for you otherwise. How do you see it?
Yeah, that's a great point. It does open up other things, and what it opens up is, the run game for the running backs. You have to account for the quarterback in most plays. That holds that backside defensive end. In the pass game, it slows down their rush. Defensive ends know they can't just go blow by the quarterback because Josh Allen could always escape. It dictates a lot of coverage because it becomes really tough to run man-to-man defense against a quarterback that can run like Josh Allen. And then when you do get man-to-man defense, it should have some type of pressure with it to try and, A, make him get the ball out quick and not be able to wait around and make a decision to run. So it dictates a lot of things when the quarterback can run like Josh Allen can. Yes, there are injury concerns as Josh Allen's career progresses. Should he maybe run the ball less, take less shots? Absolutely. But at this point of his career, let's let him play to his strength. Is he a top five pocket quarterback in the league right now? Maybe not. But he's competitive as all get out. He's super athletic. He's a top five running quarterback in the league, I would assume. And let him play to his strengths.
Yeah, my biggest criticism about the running, like, I'm not scared of him running. I said in the first hour of our show today, Eric, that I don't think I'd even want him to play if he didn't run. It's that valuable. It adds that much, I think, to his game and then their game offensively. But at 21 to nothing, the second fumble play, like that turns out to be his final rushing attempt of the game, aside from the two kneel downs at the end, which count as rushing attempts. So maybe they got there, but at 21 to nothing, that's not a spot I really want to have him running. Like if I'm playing the game and I got to do, you know, use all my stuff because it's a competitive game, fine. But at 21 nothing late in the second quarter, I don't know that I need to be calling designed runs for Josh Allen.
No, I see your point 100%, and that's almost the identical play. It was going towards the right side in the playoff game, but the one that Josh took a really big shot on kind of shook him up for the rest of the game from what I saw. So, yeah, I see your point 100%. And, you know, some of the runs he had during the game were quarterback read plays, and Josh is so competitive. You know, he's going to keep a lot of those. He wants to keep the ball in his hands. He knows he's an effective runner. And then I see what Brian Daboll is doing. So if I'm an offensive coordinator and I have a guy like Josh Allen, I want him scrambling towards the sideline. I want him getting out of bounds. I want him getting down on the ground. That was a sweep to the boundary. You would think, you know, you can get him towards the boundary where he's not going to take a shot like that. But, you know, you live and learn. And maybe next time you don't call that play, because that cornerback, if not blocked, and that's a tough block on the outside because you have to sustain it for so long, if he could take a shot at it. And honestly, I was a little less concerned about the fumble and more concerned about the shot he took because he flipped over and then his leg hit another defender. And to me, I don't even want to say it out loud, but bad things can happen when your leg's kind of dangling like that and the side of it hits another defender.
Yeah, you've got experience in that, I think, right? One other thing, unfortunately. One thing on his mobility I wanted to ask you about today, Eric, and that's whether or not they might scheme to have him beat a free guy. There were a couple of plays yesterday where he made a guy coming in unblocked miss, and he can do that. And there's probably value in that, right? If you haven't allotted somebody to that guy, then maybe, you know, that's somebody else that can be doing something else that is helping your offense. Would it surprise you? Like, am I nuts to think that they might just sort of draw it up and go, okay, well, Josh, you're going to have to make this linebacker miss, okay? And go from there. Like, is that something you design or is that just happenstance?
I think that just happens. So when you get a free runner like that, you either beat him with the throw or you try and do what Josh Allen does. And it kind of reminds me of Ben Roethlisberger in the pocket, to where one free rusher rarely brings Josh down. Now, at times it rushes him, it can get him into a bad decision, but man, he did such a phenomenal job maneuvering the pocket yesterday, keeping his eyes down the field. And then, as I mentioned earlier, scrambling towards the sideline on most of his QB scrambles from the pass plays. But No, I honestly don't think that they would ever try and plan and allow those free rushes to come unless they were going to beat him with a throw. So that does happen a lot of times. To your point, hey, we're not going to sit at the line and try and guess every play where Greg Williams is going to bring someone. But if someone comes and we're not sliding the line that way, or if we don't have a running back for him, either beat him with a throw or you're going to have to go make a miss. And to your point, Josh Allen's very good at making those guys miss.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a run on the right sideline on a 3rd and 8 for a first down, just tiptoeing on the sideline and turning his hips to be able to get upfield. Like, that's really, really good stuff.
Right. The reason I mentioned the thing about making the guy miss is because, like, I get very excited, and I do think about Roethlisberger, and I'm glad you mentioned him, Eric. Like, you make that guy miss, then I'm thinking about somebody running free downfield because maybe DBs were expecting the blitz to get home, and so they're maybe a little like thinking they only got to cover for, you know, 2 seconds as opposed to four, and suddenly Allen's rolling out to his right, and, like, I need Diggs or Brown just, like, streaking down the field. Like, that's a big play possibility.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And one of the things I noticed yesterday is, and I noticed all last season too, but it just showed up again yesterday, on the scrambles, John Brown becomes so available for Josh Allen to where he never gives him a throw back across his body. I know a lot of the times John Brown's already on that side of the field. It makes it easier. And maybe Josh Allen knows to roll out to the side of John Brown when it happens. But I feel like John Brown just does a great job of breaking off whatever route he's doing on the scramble and then making himself available towards the sideline. So Josh has a safe throw, so the ball either goes out of bounds or John Brown's in a position to make the catch. But I can't remember how many times last year they converted first downs off scrambles with John Brown just in perfect position down the field, almost like it was supposed to happen.
Right. With Eric Wood again this season, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog on WGR. So, Eric, if you didn't know that there weren't any preseason games when you sat down to watch football yesterday, do you think you would have noticed?
No, honestly. I mean, during the 1 o'clock hour with me doing the Bills postgame coverage, I was pretty locked into that one, even though I would have loved to have multiple TV screens going to see that Patriots Dolphins game and do some scouting there. And then I always love watching my boy Lamar Jackson play, but I was locked into that Bills game, so I can't comment on them all. But what I saw from the Bills is pretty sharp execution, but that was expected. You know, as much continuity as they have, as many returning starters, you know, the way they operate, I didn't expect there to be a huge drop-off. Seemed like Sam Darnold and his receivers had obviously had a tough day, and it seemed like early Sam Darnold was off. And I don't know if you can blame that on the preseason. You know, it's windy in Orchard Park. I don't know what you want to blame that on, but he missed a number of throws, and now, granted, the Bills' defensive line did a great job of moving him off of the spot on almost every passing attempt, which is a phenomenal job by them. But I thought they were off. But, no, I thought the Bills, you know, you couldn't necessarily tell that they didn't have any preseason games.
Yeah, I admit that it's a loaded question because for a long time, in the course of every summer, Bulldog and I are talking about the merits of the preseason, and most coaches will say the same things about it, why it's important. And the one thought I've had in my head forever has been, wait a minute, Ohio State will not play any preseason games. They will roll out within the first 2 weeks, they're playing some other nationally ranked team. If they lose, that might be their season. Like, they might need to be undefeated to get, this is going back before the playoff, but you know, you get the point.
Right.
And it's young guys and it's way more players. Why don't they have to have 5 preseason games? You know, they just don't have them, and they go ahead. And I feel like one thing about the NFL yesterday, I watched a lot of the other games too. The night game was excellent. I mean, I don't know. How could you have looked at NFL games yesterday and thought, I think people were ready to say it too, Eric. Like, you can tell that they haven't had practice games.
Right. So. Yeah, no, I see your point completely. And there's a lot of veterans in the NFL that would be right alongside of you, and there's probably a lot of undrafted college free agents and a lot of rookies right now that are probably saying the other thing, like,
yeah,
hey, I would have had a better shot of making the team, or you know, I would have had a better shot of contributing in week one had there been a preseason. I could have showed what I could do in a game.
Sure.
But all that being said, I think the no preseason, I've been saying it for months, I think it only helps the Bills because they have assembled a team of guys that take care of business in the offseason. They knew they were going to be training, and then, you know, with the amount of restarters that they have returning on both sides of the ball. I mean, there was very few guys yesterday. Gilliam, the fullback, maybe a couple guys on special teams, and then Gabe Davis, the rookie receiver. But they weren't relying on hardly anybody that hasn't had significant NFL action.
Right.
Eric, I'm wondering, you know, we've talked a lot on this show, and I don't recall how many times it would have come up when you were a regular with us for all those seasons. The 300-yard passing game, like your career as a Bill, there weren't a lot of them, especially from like 2014 on. And yesterday there was one. How cognizant are players on offense or on the team of that? Do they pay attention to it at all? Was it ever a thing you guys talked about? And is it a big deal for the offense that Josh got to 312 yards yesterday?
No, it's definitely not something you're paying attention to during the course of a game. Maybe if it gets out of hand and you're smoking somebody, you check out the stats during the game, peek up at the scoreboard. It gets a lot easier now that everyone wants to play fantasy football, and they put a lot more stats up in the stadium during the game now than when I started my career. But, no, we're not really worried about it during the game, and honestly, we weren't that worried about it, at least not from an O-line perspective. And I was always good buddies with the quarterbacks. I knew they weren't worried about it too. But hey, it's a milestone achievement. It's like in baseball, a multi-home run game, whatever it may be. You know, you want the team to win, and then afterwards you celebrate those types of things. And that's a great game for Josh Allen. I'm actually really, really, really glad that his first 300-yard game came in a win as well. It would have been kind of tainted if his first game was the Bills trying to climb back in the second half, running a bunch of hurry-up offense against a prevent, which, you know, I don't want to throw guys I played with under the bus, but I feel like some of those 300-yard games that I blocked for came in those situations.
There haven't been many. Their last win when the quarterback threw for 300 was a game that was maybe best remembered for a laser pointer. Does that tip off, Eric, which game?
Yeah, Detroit.
Detroit.
Detroit, Kyle Orton.
That's it. 6 years ago was their last win when they had a 300-yard passer, and they've only had two, maybe three losses since then. So, Eric, you mentioned Lamar Jackson as one of your guys, Louisville. Tom Brady, you've talked about Brady with us over the years, and you know you've said a lot of nice things about him, and you've talked about having some sort of a friendship or relationship with him. You tweeted yesterday, are Bills fans rooting for him in Tampa? And you know, that seemed like a sincere question. Then you tweeted about how you were enjoying the responses, some of which were like, are you kidding? But I think it's a good question. Like, so what did you find out about this?
I found out that Bills fans truly hate Tom Brady, no matter what jersey he's in. And they want bad things to happen to him, just no matter what. But honestly, it was hilarious. And yes, I've had just a crazy amount of respect for the sacrifice Tom Brady makes to get to this point in his career, be playing at that level. Just the amount of time, energy, and resources he puts into being ready on the field, I just have a tremendous amount of respect for. But, I found it really entertaining, and I'm still getting responses to it, which is just absolutely priceless.
I'm only bringing this up because you said that you're enjoying that. I mean, maybe I wouldn't have brought it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
no.
Today, I
definitely enjoyed it.
Today, Bruce Arians kind of called him out. And he paraphrasing his point about the game was, like his original point about the game was, well, Brady didn't look like that in practice, and what they showed us, we were ready for. And he sort of backtracked a little bit, but it's still like stunning that that would be said at all, I think, by any coach at this point. But it did happen. So how do you see them? That wasn't a great day.
No, it wasn't a great day for him, and it's going to be interesting. It's a shame it happened at this point of his career that he moved on from Belichick for a few reasons. One, it would have been great for the Bills if he would have moved on to the NFC a long time ago. And then two, we don't get to have the true, like, was it Belichick or was it Brady debate. But if Tom fails with all of the talent they have down there, and Bill Belichick with the most opt-outs in the league and Cam Newton coming in July to be their quarterback, all those things said, if they have a good season this year, the arrow up would be pointing in Belichick's favor.
Yeah, I responded to your question, too, with I threw up in my mouth a little bit, I think is what I said, the idea of rooting for Brady. But as you lay that out, like I liked the question, too. I mean, I was trying to be funny, like responding that way, because I can't find my way to root for him while I'm watching him play. But in a conversation like we're having right now here at, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the day after football games, I don't want Belichick's legend to grow either. So, like, if he ends up being right about Brady, that's not going to be good for me either. Like, I might be screwed either way. You know, I watch either of those people participate in NFL football, and yeah, I won't get graphic here, but I don't want them to be successful. I'll just say that. And Brady failing will, in a certain way, validate Belichick, and I don't need that for Belichick, that's for sure.
No, I agree with all that assessment.
What about Newton there, Eric?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how effective they are. You know, they caught him off guard with some, you know, different type for Josh McDaniels, a little different looking offense yesterday. Most quarterback runs they've had in a really long time, 15 for Cam Newton, throws for 155. They're used to, you know, with Brady, they're always over 200 yards passing. And, you know, we'll see how it works out there. You know, it's time will tell how good the Dolphins are, if that ends up being a quality win or not. Dolphins definitely added some talent, had a bunch of draft picks the last couple of years, but we'll see how that all shakes out. But they're a fascinating team to watch right now with all the people that have opted out. They hold the Dolphins to 11 points and do enough on offense to win, and we'll see if week to week they kind of progress on offense or people figure them out, and if Cam Newton at this point of his career is pretty limited in his ability to throw the ball down the field, they might be in trouble.
We'll see. Good start. Both teams, the Bills and the Patriots, I'm just taken by this, like co-favorites just about to win the division, and they both open with the other division rivals at home and each win by 10. So really not easy to separate the Bills and the Patriots after yesterday either. Very good. Eric, it's great to have you back on, as we've said. Any questions for us?
Nope, not this week, but maybe I'll come prepared next week.
We'll be ready just in case. Thanks, Eric.
Good deal. Thanks, guys.
There's Eric Wood, his appearance there on the Western Hotline on WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you, and by Jim's Steakout, Western New York's best steak hoagies since 1981.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.